What about the stories of people that you discover in the community you're wanting to reach? Well, if they can see within your own life brokenness, authenticity, a lot of times it's not that they're attracted to how great you are, but they're attracted to how real you are and how that Christ in your brokenness shows up. That's attractive in a missional sense.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Send Network's ongoing Training for Trainers resource. Thanks for joining us on our journey to learn together how to make your transformational training even better. We want to encourage and empower you to keep growing in your confidence and competence as a trainer. Now, here are the hosts for today.
Well, hi, everybody. My name is Rick Duncan, and we are here on our ongoing Training for Trainers podcast through the Send Network. And so we're glad that you're able to join us today. With us is my co-host, and it's Sam Dula. So, Sam, how are you doing? What is God teaching you lately as a trainer?
Doing great, man. Just the more and more I think about the privilege that we have to get in front of trainers, the more and more I think of how precious those moments are. And so really just making the most out of the time. Every time we get in front of a trainer, every time we send something to trainers, we only have like a small slither of their time. And God is just really allowing me to see the value of that, the privilege I have in being able to play that role.
Well, God has given you a special gift to nurture the hearts of trainers and planters. So we are certainly glad you're on the team. And our guest today is David Butler. David oversees church planting in Greater Boston. He's not from the Northeast originally, but a trip to Boston rocked his world for the city. And it was a lead pastor for 35 years in Tennessee, Kentucky, New Hampshire. He now lives on mission with a prayer and a vision to see things happen in Boston like they're happening in heaven. He's got a BS in political science from Murray State, an MDiv from Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, a DMin from Gordon-Conwell, which is in the Boston area. And he and his wife, Gail, have 3 married children, 9 amazing grandkids. I'm jealous of that. We only have 2 grandkids. Let's go, family. and it says here, I'm just going to read this off his bio. There are a few places David enjoys more than being at Fenway taking in a Red Sox game. So I love David because he loves baseball. At least that's one of the reasons I love him. So David, we're glad that you're with us on the podcast today. And today we're going to be talking a little bit about the spiritual health of the trainer and the spiritual and emotional relational health of the planter. So we spend time in our Send Network assessments focusing on the spiritual and emotional health or the character of the potential planter. And we cover that in the first session of our training. Yet we know that our planters still face significant character challenges. So what is it, David, about church planting that exposes the character flaws in the lives of our planters?
Well, I think it up front, Rick, and thanks again for the invitation. And Sam, it's great to be with you. But I think we make an assumption that if we have addressed the character issue, that we can move forward. And the character issue is not something that is it's something that you can say we've already addressed that, so we can move on to the next competency. It's not a competency. It's an ongoing process of development. And we just got to keep that in mind. And when you're in a church planting context, everybody knows and everybody will tell you that church planting by its very nature is going to be demanding. It's tough. It's difficult. It's hard. Somebody said here in Boston that church planting here is like cultivating concrete. We know that. So, but I think when you start looking at it in a more specific way, three things come to mind. One is expectations. I think expectations, either real or perceived or ghost expectations, that you put on yourself or family, there's this sense of, hey, wonder how this is going to work out. Told everybody you're going to this particular city and you're going to plant a church and you're just trusting God to raise up a life-giving church and even maybe, talk about it in terms of scope and significance and expectations. And when those expectations of others in terms of family, you put on yourself, you're sending church, they're waiting to hear great reports. And that expectations creates a kind of a undertow of pressure where you're saying this has got to happen, and that really puts your care to a test. And there are a lot of things that can come out of that as a result of those expectations. I think another thing that happens in church planting world, even though everybody says they don't do it and not to do it, is comparison. you just can't help but start looking at and hearing about stories of somebody else, and it's not your story, and their story is better than your story. And it's very easy to forget that you're not here to plant a church. You're here to, quote unquote, be a part of God's kingdom building work. You can lose sight of that very quickly. And then I think one of the obvious pressures happens to do with resources. And I'm not just talking about financial. That's obviously one of those concerns that you have. But it's just having people in your life that can share the ministry with you so you don't feel like it's all on you. And not only that, but people that you can share your life with and having people there that you can experience community with. So I'm sure we could look at other things, but planters, and we all have a tendency to do this, is overestimate what can happen in the short term and underestimate what can happen in the long term. And so as a result of that, the expectations, the comparisons, this desire to have other people be engaged with you. One of the things we've seen a little bit of a pattern here. A lot of times planters will get here and people will come join them. And then year two, year three, some of those people that said, I'm with you till the end, they're saying, you know, this really hasn't worked out. And all of a sudden you're faced with another kind of reality. And that puts pressure and it shapes your character.
David, that is so good, man. I mean, I was just writing down and thinking through how the expectations and comparisons, just those two alone, have been pressures that we continue to hear from planters just in training and just in building relationally with guys who are in church planting. I wanted to ask you, I wanted to jump in real quick, if I didn't mean to cut you off, but when you think of some of the train wrecks that you've heard from, or maybe you've seen because of planters have lacked the spiritual, emotional, and relational maturity, and please speak very general, you don't necessarily have to be specific, but what have been some of the train wrecks that you've seen just over the time that you've been investing there in the Boston area?
A little over a year or so ago, I brought together what I would call our seasoned church planters, guys that have been here 6 years plus. We just had an honest conversation for about 3 hours talking about how do you avoid, what are some of the factors that cause what we described that day as epic failures, and you described as train wrecks. And one of the things we did, we kind of categorized them. There's the massive blowout, the moral failure, the person who does something that is just addictive and even perhaps even terribly wrong in what they're doing, illegal even. And that's one category. Another category is the planter experiences something in their life that was just an unexpected event. Maybe a family member is going through a hard time at a distance and they can't be with family, or maybe there's some kind of a moment, it's not sinful, that in their life that all of a sudden just kind of throws their life upside down. Maybe it's one of their children that's having a hard time adjusting. And then there's another category. It's kind of a slow leak. It's where it's below the waterline. Nobody even knows what's going on. It's kind of a subtle, and all of a sudden what seems like a overnight collapse, it's just been going on for a long time. And maybe it's things that they've kept below the waterline and kind of secretive to themselves over the years. And now it's coming out because of the pressure where they are. And then just in church planting world, the RPMs, they're just way up there, and they can cause burnout quicker, probably in a church planting context, than any other place, to where you just get tired. And when all those things start happening in any one of those categories, isolation can set in, and whenever we're in a position of isolation, that's when we're most prone to a train wreck.
Wow.
So what do you guys do on the training side to, first of all, help stop those things from happening, and then also on the training side to try to intercept those things when you do see them taking place?
This is going to be something I'm going to probably share over and over again, and this is something I've learned in the 3 or 4 times I've actually led a Sin Network training cohort. We're not spending enough time letting the guys tell their stories. And I feel like we have got to spend more time and I don't know how to, you know, I'm still working on how we integrate that. But we've got to spend time listening, and not so much to try to be armchair psychologists, but as trainers, we've got to start listening to people's stories. And we've got to make notes in such a way that we begin to have a better understanding of maybe where they're coming from, some of their family of origin, some of their best experiences, kind of to tag on a tear sheet exercise from Brian Fry, peaks and valleys, to allow us to get some sense of where they've been. I think we need to incorporate more of that, even if it means the session needs to go longer, and then follow that up as trainers with one-on-one time with each of those planters, listening even more, taking more notes, and again, not trying to be the counselor, but trying to understand so maybe you can point them to see, hey, this is an area maybe you need to take a look at. Here's a couple of people might suggest you talk to, or here's a reference or resource or something. That's just one thing that immediately comes to my mind.
So I'm a church planter. God's called me to Boston. I'm going to turn Boston upside down and inside out. I'm going to win the city to Jesus. And now you're telling me I need to go see a counselor? How do you help those planters kind of move toward that? Because a lot of times I've been sent here to fix everybody. Now you're telling me I need to be fixed.
Yeah. Again, it's not where you, the first thing out, you listen and you don't provide advice and counsel as much as you let them and say, well, so how are you working through that? And, you know, do you feel like it would be great to have somebody speak into that? Hey, I've got a church planter over here. He's been here for 8 years. Hey, he is a trusted person, safe person. I'd encourage you to spend some time, because your story sounds a whole lot like his story. I think it'd be great for you to spend time with him. And if you would love to have someone else that you could speak to a little bit more freely, that maybe doesn't know you, that's a very committed biblical counselor, you feel like it'd be great to just have somebody to listen in your story, hey, that's great, but that's your call.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Do you guys have some counselors that you've recognized there in the Boston area and maybe help fund the guys to get over and have some conversations?
Absolutely. In fact, we just a little over a year ago, we opened up the Greater Boston Council for Biblical Counseling Center. And a lot of churches came together to help bring that about. And the response has been amazing. And we do provide resources, not only for the church planter, and it's been interesting. I get more calls from the church planter saying, hey, my wife is really going through a tough time. Do you know someone we can, or my child is having a challenging time. And they're at their wit's end. They're just not, you know, we've been here 6 months and we're miserable. We don't know what, my wife is miserable. She says, yes, God called us, but I didn't know he called us to this. So we really try to be sensitive to that.
No, and I really love, David, thank you so much for sharing that, because I wholeheartedly agree that this whole concept of understanding, or at least getting a better understanding of where church planters are coming from and allowing them to feel the safety of being known, I really do think that that does help them to not only mature emotionally and spiritually, but it also allows them to be healthy for the people that they're trying to reach. You know, I love the fact that you guys have that as a resource. But let me ask you this question. So when you think of some of your emotional health, healthy planters, what are some of the things that they have in common? Like if they're relationally mature, they seem to be knocking out of the park when it comes to this particular area. What are some of the key characteristics, or I should say the thread, the things that you see in common with those planters?
Well, there are some of the what we might call intangibles. I'll mention those up front, because these are not things that are gauged by any outward evaluation or assessment. As I would say, for example, I look for resiliency. I look for church planters who have that sense of grit about themselves, that that's maturity, and they hit something that's challenging and tough. And instead of recoiling, they find themselves, you know, failing forward, pushing through in a good way. And that's one I just mention all the time, that this sense of resiliency and grit. the other thing that I think is very important for us to see is that they love the city more than they want to change the city. When we start hearing candidates say, I'm coming there, I know Boston is, it's a culture creator, and if we can go in and change the culture, we can change the world, so let's take on the culture and let's change the culture. And as soon as I hear guys say that, it's almost like, hey, we don't need you to come save the city. We need you to come love the city in Jesus' name. And if you come with that, you'll make it. If you come with the other, you're not going to make it. And you got to come with an absolute crazy love for this people, because that's the superpower that we as Christ followers have. Yes. And so, hey, come love the city. Beyond that, one of our church planters, very insightful. I was asking him, what do you think makes, you know, the type of church planter you're going to want to look for to help plant churches out of your church that you're seeing God raise up? And he gave me a list of things, and I thought, man, that is so good. And these were the words he gave me. They all happened to begin with an H. Humble. They have a genuine spirit of gratitude about them, and they want to kind of live out a Philippians 2 lifestyle of how can we be there for others? This isn't about me. They're hungry. They want to grow. They're like a sponge. They're constantly looking to others to, they don't think they've got it all together. They acknowledge their gaps in their life. Holy, and by that I mean they have an awareness of their messiness, and they have an awareness of God's grace. And so they're holy in that sense. And then they have a high EQ. They have this understanding of emotional intelligence. They have this understanding that ultimately ministry comes down to relationships vertically and horizontally. Mm-hmm. And they know that. And then finally, hustle. There's a sense of initiative about themselves. There's a good rhythm of life, a healthy sense of initiative. And then there's a rhythm to their life as well. Calling is what propels them, not drivenness. And so those would be just some of the things that I thought it was just a great list. And I said, that's pretty insightful. I'm gonna use that.
I love that list. I love that list.
That's good.
That's great.
I'll preach right there, bro. That's really good.
No doubt.
So one of the books that you recommended to me recently is called The Relational Soul by Richard Plass, Jim Cofield. I have greatly benefited from the book. I've read it. I went back through and tried to answer the questions in detail at the end of each chapter. And now I'm rereading the book. It's truly, truly been impactful to me. So I want to thank you for it personally. What is it about that book that first grabbed your attention, David?
Well, it's real interesting. My youngest son is a family, Christian family and marriage counselor, therapist. And he said, Dad, I got this book I want you to read. This has been a couple of years ago. And he said, it's called The Relational Soul. So he recommended it to me. And as I began to make my way through it, I began to realize that this isn't your typical book on emotional, spiritual health. This doesn't give you formulas. A lot of times, either they'll give you formulas or they'll spend 8 chapters talking about the challenges and then close out with 2 chapters and kind of, here's the 4 or 5 things you need to do. But this is written in a very personal narrative manner in which they are very honest. They provide, they don't provide principles. They don't, as much as they provide, I think, a way of understanding that will help you live out principles. And does a great job of understanding the whole difference between false self and true self and the whole ideal of being relationally healthy. And I loved it because at the very end of the book, at the very last chapter, they acknowledge this is not something that you're ever going to say, I think I've got this mastered. But it's going to be an ongoing journey and process, which I think is so encouraging because a lot of times you read books like that, of that nature, and you're thinking, I'm going to go do this. And you go do it. You're like, hey, that's not what I expected to happen. Because that's not what the book said. It's a journey with them. It's a process with them. And I really appreciated that about
them. Wow. Wow. So I haven't read the book yet. So don't give me any anything that's going to any spoilers, I guess, is probably a better way of saying it. But with that in mind, how have you used the book when it comes to like pastoring, when it comes to training planters? How have you used, I guess, principles from it for your own life when it comes to overseeing leaders?
Well, first, it's done some soul work on me, which, right. You know, I think that's been great. And just the giving me a broader understanding, let me kind of back up a little bit. As Rick said, I've been in ministry, been a pastor, 3 different churches, well over, kicking up to 40 years. These type of issues, the spiritual, emotional health, were things that nobody ever talked about. Mm-hmm. In the old John Wesley question, how is your soul? Nobody ever asked. Everything was more about task, moving forward. Everything again was about, you know, what are you, how are you succeeding? It was never about what's going on in your soul. And so when I read this, it reminded me of my first encounter with a book like this years ago. It was called Secrets of the Family Tree. And it just delved into this whole soul issue and what shapes you. And so as I'm reading through the book, I'm saying, I wish I had had this at the beginning of my ministry. Right. I wish I'd had this over the years. Because what it does, it gives you permission to acknowledge. It gives you a sense of how to be aware of what to look for in terms of what's healthy, what's not healthy. And it helps you to understand. So that's why I did that. So that's where that's coming from. And so more than anything else, it gives you an awareness of what a false self is and a true self is. And it gives you an awareness. And then it moves into Christ's redemptive work. Now the gospel begins to work in your soul to change your soul. We think discipleship is the ultimate, and it certainly is. But if you don't do the soul work, your discipleship is not going to be enough. Mm.
So in the book, obviously, he does talk about this false self and how we have a tendency to relate to others from a false self. I read a series of books by Susan Howatch, and she talks about how clergy often try to operate from a glittering image, like I'm better than I really am. So what is this false self, and how have you seen that hurt church planters in their efforts to plant a great church?
Well, the false self, and again, is as they work through in the relational. So it's you're projecting an image. You're very protective. You're constantly trying to look for ways to pose yourself in a certain way. And so when you're listening to church planters, when you see them in a group and you hear them in a conversation, you're not hearing a lot of soul talk. You're hearing a lot of guys talking about what's going on in their church plant and asking questions about, so what did you do here? How'd you do that? They're wanting the practical how-tos. And that's what the conversations 90% of the time are all about. And they're all kind of projecting themselves in a certain way in that conversation. And I think it's important in those moments as a trainer for me to pick up in that regard and say, so tell me again, when you start thinking about your church plant, tell me again, in your eyes, what do you feel like God is calling you to accomplish in your church plan? What are you looking for? And tell me about the work he's doing in you. Is this coming out of his work in you, in your soul? Or is this something that you feel like you need to do because this is what other people have told you need to do as a planter?
Wow. Wow. Okay, so David, you're hitting on some really good stuff here. Okay, so when you talk about having that conversation and helping these planters, because again, we're talking to planters here, they're now taking this journey from this false self to their true self. How do you even have that conversation? I mean, these are planters. They've been told that, you know, God is upon them. He's smiling down upon them. Like, is that conversation hard? Is it welcoming from them? I mean, how do you even navigate that? Especially when you're talking about, you know, some planters that you probably don't necessarily have the time invested relationally to really begin to, you know, dive as deep Is a conversation tough to even bring up? I'm in my head, I'm hearing that, and I'm wondering, do you ever get pushback with it? How do you really journey them from leaving this false self, first of all, owning it, and then begin navigating into their true self? Is it tough?
Well, I've been in this role now for 5 years in November since the commission. We have a lot of arena of responsibilities, and they're all good and they're all important and they're all necessary. But I will tell you that as a sensitive missionary, the one role that I see needs to be more and more part of what I do on a daily basis is just simply sit down and become a part of the story of each of these planters. And that doesn't mean to sit down with them and say, I want to tell you some things that I've seen that I feel like you need to work on. No, not that at all. As much as it is, as I'm listening to the conversation, to be so dialed in with a sense of discernment to look beneath the surface for what's really happening and just to ask questions. One of my favorite paragraphs in the book, and I've shared it with Rick even before he read the book. It describes this counselor, this friend, this mentor. And it's a great description of, I think, what trainers can be. And he talked about this particular mentor, and this is the paragraph that he used to talk about this particular mentor. He said, years of deep and regular communion with God enabled him to live well with his significant limitations. He had learned to die daily to his false self, and as a result was an amazingly gracious and open-hearted, direct and wise, and he could laugh. He was someone I wanted to be around, so we began to meet a couple times a month with me. And this is a key phrase. With me, he minored in advice and double majored in encouragement and perspective.
Wow.
At his stage in life, he wasn't trying to prove anything. He just loved me. In Harold, the mentor, the presence of Jesus washed over me to such an extent that God no longer felt remote, even though my circumstances remained difficult. Wow. That became my job description.
Wow. That is powerful. That is really powerful.
What is it about minored in advice and double majored in encouragement and perspective? What is it about that that's attractive to you personally, David?
Well, my nature is to fix. That's just my response. I want to fix. I want to give advice. I want to tell them four things I think they could do that could change everything. And I've had to learn that that is not my role. My role is off stage, not on stage. And for our role is to be a shadow warrior for all of these planters and to be there in a way that is, protective in a healthy manner, and to listen and provide perspective. Ask good questions. Pay attention. And the moments I've failed as a Sin City missionary have been moments when I've rushed in to say, hey, this is what you ought to do, and why aren't you doing that? Come on. Here are some things that I think would change everything about your church plant right now, why you're struggling. And in those moments, I did more harm than I did good.
Is there something else that you would say you want them to have in place as they continue to connect with planters and encourage them to grow spiritually and emotionally and relationally? Is there something else aside from asking good questions that you would add to their toolbox?
Well, again, I think being able to bring these guys together outside of the times when you get together for the training, bringing them together in with no agenda kind of gatherings over a meal, and just letting them be and letting them enjoy being with each other, that tears down defenses. These guys get to know each other a little better. One of the things that we're going to try to do this next year, up to this point, I've taken the relational soul and I've passed it on to some of our planters to read, and then we'll discuss one-on-one. But in our upcoming, we're going to be starting a residency in fact, next week. And the residency is built around Sin Network training. We're just amplifying it. We're taking it from just the 5.5 months. We're taking it and making it a year-long journey. That's not just the SEND Network training, but something that they'll, if the competency is communication, they're going to be in a local church, one of our local church plants. They're going to be talking about communication there with that pastor, that planter. And then we're going to have a SEND Boston cohort where they will come together, not just for the SEND Network training, but they're going to spend a whole day talking about communication with three of our lead planters. Well, we're also going to include the relational soul as part of their reading. And then about midway through the residency, we're going to bring them all together for a retreat weekend. And we're just going to make it that, hopefully the kind of experience by that time, the guys feel a certain measure of comfortability to where they can begin to share their lives with each other. And we can begin to even strengthen our relationship with each other and our understanding of where they are and develop something that will go beyond just quote unquote training.
That's really good. I
love that idea. That, you know, got my brain churning about what we could do here in Northeast Ohio. In the book, they talk about the past, and you've already mentioned, got to help these guys begin to tell their stories. And I think what you mean is your story of origin. I'm reading a book right now, The Body Keeps the Score. It is absolutely fascinating and talks about how, you know, so many of us have gone through various kinds of trauma and how it actually rewires the brain. And so some of the reactions that we have, some of the responses to the stimuli that come in, it's kind of unconscious reaction, and how we got to unpack what's happened to us and deal with what's happened to us so that we can kind of move forward. So in the relational soul, they say, you know, if you don't deal with the past, your past will deal with you. So how do you help guys get comfortable talking about maybe a painful experience that they had at a previous church, a painful experience that they had because of a mom and dad? Some of the guys that are planting churches for us, they've probably been abused sexually or abused physically, and it comes out in weird ways when pressure hits, when they are planting. How do you get guys to talk about that stuff? I mean, I've heard you say, I give them the book, I try to have these one-on-one conversations, try to get them away from the training. What are there some other things that you do to get them talking?
Well, I think, and this is where the trainer comes in. I think trainers have to share their own story of brokenness. And they go, hey, let me, and in an appropriate way. I think sometimes you, too much information and too much transparency is not healthy. Navel gazing is never good. I think, though, an appropriate way, and to bring other planners in and to say, hey, I wanted you to hear this story. I want you to hear Josh White over Charles River. I want you to hear what happened to him in the second year of church planning. And by that, they're all of a sudden, it gives them permission. It's like, oh, okay, I can. It becomes a safe place because somebody else has stepped out.
When they hear somebody speak with authenticity and integrity from a place of health about their past story, it could be the first time that they've ever heard a significant Christian leader express those kinds of things, because we're not comfortable with this, you know. We're not comfortable.
I remember the first time I heard somebody, a very well-known Christian, a very well-known leading pastor in Southern Baptist Life, describe his bout with depression. And I was like, I didn't know Christians were supposed to be depressed. I didn't know that. And then I began to read about Charles Haddon Spurgeon. And it was like, I can share things about my life. And I think being able to share that in an appropriate way, at an appropriate time, is helpful.
You mentioned one other book. And of course, we've been talking about the relational soul. Are there some other tools that you feel like are helpful when it comes to talking about these kinds of issues? Like Spurgeon's Sorrows is a book
right.
about depression. Christians Get Depressed Too by David Murray is a wonderful
right.
book about depression. Are there some other tools that are in your toolkit?
Well, some of mine would probably be dated, but first book I ever read was David Seaman's book, The Healing of Memories. And David Seaman's for years was a missionary in India and then a professor at Asbury. And that's way from the past. But there's another very, I think, a helpful in this overall conversation about relational health. Ken Sandy has written and also has an entire kind of curriculum teaching process called Relational Wisdom. And it's excellent. And I'm trying to figure out a way to incorporate that in some of our training. Relational Wisdom, very helpful in terms of how to relate to God in a healthy way, how to relate to yourself, how to relate to others.
And how this other book that you mentioned was Secrets of the Family Tree.
Yeah, it's got a new title today. I think it's been, Uncovering Your Family Secrets or something like that. I don't remember the name of it that it is now, but it's a good read. It was written by Dave Carter and Henry Cloud.
Okay. Because some of what you've had to say is like, wait a minute, you're telling me I got to spend time with these guys outside of the training cohort? You're making my job harder, man. You're asking me to work more. What would you tell our trainers?
Well, again, we have to move from in our training, and it's a mindset. I have to battle it. This is not about executing, completing the task. This is about development. And development is not something that requires minimal amount of effort or time. It means you've got to be willing to say I'm glad to step into a deeper commitment, a deeper relationship. I realize margin is always a challenge, but I've watched a couple of our trainers do that exceptionally well. They realize, hey, this is not about me just saying I completed the task for 5.5 months and they're good to go. As much as they are, I want to have an ongoing relationship with this individual. I see great potential. This is about a collaborative. It's not about me and my church plan. It's about a collaborative effort throughout the kingdom. If I can pour into them, help them be a healthy church planter, have a church planting experience, hey, that's for the kingdom. That makes our what we're doing in the city that much stronger. So you take it away from a task to complete or executing, or trying to get them to complete, and it turns again, it becomes relational. It's all relational. I don't know where that makes any sense, but I think when you start thinking that way, it takes it away from this. I've got to get this done. I've got to complete this lesson.
So some of the trainers that are listening to this might be thinking, all right, I'm supposed to help a guy grow emotionally, relationally, deal with his past. Honestly, I haven't dealt with mine. I'm kind of stuck myself. What would you say to that trainer?
I would say, hey, that's a great discovery. Good for you. and because this is just going to help you in terms of your own ability to come alongside these planters. Again, Rick, the way you cast it there, it sounds like, whoa, no, thank you. I'm not going to be a trainer. That's what is going to be required of me. But I think it's much better when you start looking at this as God has called me. He's given me the training, given me the tools, and I'm willing to allow God to use this to shape my own personal life so that I can be more effective in my leadership. I mean, that's the ongoing part of leadership development. How can I grow as a leader to be a leader of leaders? I think it's a valuable process. Again, I just caution myself and I caution even those listening. Nobody's asking you to be an armchair psychologist. Nobody's asking you to delve into these challenging issues. If somebody comes from an abusive background or they had an absentee father or whatever it may be, but just be aware of it so that you can know how to give some perspective and encouragement and perhaps bring in outside sources that can be of help. So it's not about you doing this, but being aware of it, and so that you can be a part of helping them get to a healthy place.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's good. Well, David, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule and sharing your wisdom, your insights. This is huge, because you can have the techniques and the strategies, but if you don't have those relational skills, and I love what you had to say too about the whole idea of being someone that others want to be around. If you're not a person that others want to be around, you're going to have a hard time planting a good church, that's for sure. So you need to figure out, why am I somebody that people don't like to be around? That's a tough question.
Well, and just to add this, Rick, and I know this is part of the whole process of training, if the planters as well as the trainers can begin to see how this will help them in missional engagement, you know, part of the kingdom concept is the local predicament. And we come up with all kinds of things to put in it. What about the stories of people that you discover in the community you're wanting to reach? Well, if they can see within your own life brokenness, authenticity, a lot of times it's not that they're attracted to how great you are, but they're attracted to how real you are and how that Christ in your brokenness shows up. That's attractive in a missional sense.
Woo.
That is powerful.
That's very powerful.
That is powerful.
Well, David, thanks again for the time, and thank you, Sam, for being on the call. And, thanks to everybody that's listening to this podcast. We've enjoyed being with you, and may God bless you as you seek to grow in your own emotional health and as you seek to help those planters grow.
Thanks for listening today. Our mission at Send Network Training is to equip multiplying leaders with reproducible systems to plant more healthy churches. You can follow us on Twitter at Send Network Trainers or on Facebook at Send Network Church Planter Trainers. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. This podcast was made possible by the Send Network of the North American Mission Board.